This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Jeannie Yandel, and I'm about to play you an example of something that one prominent researcher says is one of the most damaging forms of racism in modern America.
When I give presentations around the country, people will come up to me and compliment me for speaking good English. And I usually handle that by simply saying, thank you, I hope so, I was born here.
That's Dr. Darryl Sue. He's a professor of psychology at the Teachers College at Columbia University. And that audio you just heard is an example of a racial microaggression. A racial microaggression is a brief, fairly commonplace interaction that communicates a racial slight or insult to a person of color. Dr. Sue researches microaggressions, and he told me one aspect of his research is understanding the conscious intent of the person delivering it.
In this case, a person who says, you speak excellent English or something of that nature, is perceiving it as a compliment. But as the recipient of that statement, there is a hidden meaning or a meta communication being sent, and that meaning is that you are a perpetual alien in your own country, that you are not a true American. Now, when the person who is the recipient of a microaggression tries to point it out to the person, that individual is unaware of it. In fact, they frequently will think that you're misreading their intent, that you're oversensitive, that you're paranoid, because it is very difficult for them to understand the hidden meaning of their microaggression.
What then is the impact of an individual microaggression?
Microaggressions by themselves may seem harmless, trivial, and insignificant. But what what most people don't realize is that most people of color experience chronic cumulative microaggressions from the time they are born, and it's not unusual in one day for a person to be subjected to two or three microaggressions. And it takes a toll on your self-esteem and how you feel about yourself.
How do you study these things that you also described as something that is characteristically dismissed in an individual one-on-one conversation, could be just sort of excused or explained away? How do you study microaggressions and their impacts?
Okay, there's a number of different ways to do it. One of them, to run focus groups with women, with LGBT individuals, with people of color, as to their life experiences with microaggressions and how it affected them. Another means that is being employed is to have individuals of color keep daily diaries of the situations that they have encountered that constitute microaggressions and record it. And they are also given instruments of what we call subjective well-being. And what we find is a high correlation between the number of microaggressions reported by people of color and their subjective well-being. They don't feel as well. In fact, one study did of four different community colleges in New York City, and they trained observers to go into the classroom to with scoring sheets, observational sheets, to tally the number of microaggressions that occurred and the impact that it had on the students of color. Now, that study, by the way, is very interesting because what they found was that not only did microaggressions occur between fellow students to the students of color, but the person in the classroom that was most likely to deliver microaggressions was the professor or the teacher.
Dr. Sue, you just described a situation where there's a power dynamic and kind of a power imbalance happening. How then should that be handled? How do you deal with hearing a microaggression in that situation where it's a professor or perhaps a boss? How do you deal with that?
Here is, you're pointing out, that's an excellent question, because we're talking about differential status or differences in power relations. And when we explored what internally went on in the head of, let's say, participants of color in our studies, they described a situation that we labeled, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. In other words, we found that the majority of people of color did not do anything, chose not to do anything. But by that decision, what happened was that it took a psychological toll on them. They sat there and seethed away with anger, frustration, but they were also very hard on themselves by saying, you know, I'm a coward. Why didn't I at least do something about it? And so that was assailed their integrity. Now, when we began to ask, why don't you do anything about it? There were several things that occurred. One was microaggressions occur so quickly that by the time you think about doing something, it's over. The other thing we explored was what goes on in the head, in the minds of people who receive microaggressions. We found the following dynamics. When a microaggression occurs, the first thought that enters is something like, did what I think happened really happen? Was this an intentional slight or an unintentional one? If it was either, how do I respond? If I respond, what are the consequences that will occur as a result of my response? If I point this out to the instructor or teacher, you know, the consequence can be that I'm labeled as a troublemaker. I'm told that that wasn't really what happened. Or if you persist in raising this issue, you could get a lower grade or isolated by other fellow students. So the consequence of power differences play a huge role here.
I'm talking with Dr. Darryl Sue. He's a professor of psychology at the Teachers College in Columbia University in New York. We're talking about microaggressions. This is something that Dr. Sue has been studying for years. He's one of the pioneering researchers on microaggressions. And I'm going to be completely honest here. This seems like a rather hopeless situation that you've described. If the person hearing these microaggressions has to constantly ask themselves, is it worth it for me to point this out?
You know, okay, you're right about that. And that is really why we find such a negative impact upon recipients of microaggressions. And so there are several things that we teach individuals. One of the things that we teach targets of microaggressions to do is to realize that you're not crazy, that indeed this form of behavior is going on. So the first point is you've got to take care of yourself, because when you receive a microaggression, you get angry, you're pained and you're hurting. And so to think about trying to educate the perpetrator is beyond the scope of trying to take care of yourself. So the first thing is that you have to find a support group, groups that can share with you, validate what you're going through, that you're not crazy, and figure out coping things that have occurred. And people of color have learned, many things of how to cope. And to, hold on to their integrity. Now, here is the other thing I want to say, that why is the responsibility for change always on the shoulders of people of color? And this is where I feel institutions of higher education have failed. They have failed to acknowledge the existence of bias and prejudice that exists in the campus, not only in fellow students and academicians, but in the programs, policies, and practices of that institution. And colleges, I believe, have to create an environment that really begins to be truly multicultural, inclusive, and that deals with anti-racism, anti-sexism, so that they are, I think, have to build in structures that create cross-racial dialogues where people interact with one another in a facilitated means and manner, and that all of the all of the professors, the staff, or faculty, administrators need to do personal work so that they begin to understand what implicit bias is, and that they become allies in terms of changing the academic environment so that it is an inclusive, warm, accepting one. All of us are socialized into the society, and it really is a height of arrogance or naivete to think that any of us are immune from inheriting biases that are deeply embedded in this society and culture. And they come out in ways that we're not aware of. But they are nevertheless, as I would say, microaggressions are more damaging and harmful than the overt forms of racism that we witness today. I mean, I'm not saying that a hate crime is bad, but the white supremacist has less to do with the quality of my life as a person of color than the well-intentioned individuals who go to voting booths to educate children who decide who they want to hire. And these are good, moral, decent individuals who experience that, but yet they are the ones that are making the decisions that create the inequities in our society.
Dr. Darryl Sue is the author of the book Microaggressions in Everyday Life: Race, Gender, and Sexual Orientation. This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Jeannie Yandel.